The opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Step outside of your comfort zone. See the world with a whole new perspective. Join us and experience the unexplained on The Paranormal View.
And welcome everybody right here to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. I want to thank everybody for taking the time to be with us tonight. And it's been a gorgeous day here, so I assume that there's still a lot of people that's out running that little grill and cooking out and enjoying the outdoors today. But if you are listening from around the world, we appreciate each and every one of you. And if you'd like to come over to the chat room and join everybody here, feel free to do that. It's at the Para-X Radio Network.com. And just click on the chat now button and you'll be in with all these wonderful people. You'll be able to interact with them and with us by asking questions. We also, if you do have questions and you're listening from somewhere else, you can still send us a question. Just make it out to theparanormalview@gmail.com. We will get that answered for you and just make an attention question. So with that, wonderful day, as I said, and I believe it's the same way. We have with us tonight Jeffrey Gould.
Hello, hello. Happy International Fairy Day.
And Barbara Duncan.
International Fairies?
Yeah. Oh. Fairy Day. It's June 24th.
Is that them little things that fly around?
Little things that fly around. Yeah, yes. Like Tinkerbell, the Fae, all that.
Yeah. Well, I've seen them before.
Yes, you have, actually. And there's a great video I wish I could find again of somebody taking a video, and the moment they see it, they run away. I'm like, ugh, why do you bother posting it if you're not going to show it for
right.
Time?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to run out and see it, but by the time I got out there, it flew around the other side of the tree, and I never could find it again. So I was disappointed.
It was hiding with the keeper elves.
Yeah. So, but anyway, we got a great, great show lined up for tonight. Lots and lots and lots of. I hit the wrong button as usual.
You didn't disconnect the show, did you?
No, I didn't disconnect the show. I just kind of like disconnected me.
Yeah.
Not from that, from the chat room. So I'm okay. I'm still there. So don't worry about it.
Both my browsers are not getting into the chat room today. It's just driving me crazy.
Well, that's okay. We'll watch it. Barbara and I will. But if you're in the chat room and you have questions, you can private chat either Ceiling Cat or myself, Henry Foister. We will get those questions answered for you there also. But tonight, well, we got lots going on, not just with tonight, but coming up in July. Let's see, I believe it's the 21st. And 22nd and 23rd in Louisville, Kentucky, there is the Mid-South Paranormal Convention, and I'll be going there. So I'll be talking to a whole bunch of people and hopefully getting a whole lot more people booked for some shows. And we got some great shows coming up that we've already got people booked for. So make sure you listen and stay tuned for all those. In September September 16th, I'm sorry. The Para-X group will be having a thing at Fort Mifflin. I think people from Fort Mifflin was calling it Para X Con, and I think Rebecca was wanting to change the name, and we were talking about a new name like...
This isn't the Hillcon one, is it?
No. We were talking about a name called the Para X Gathering. So I don't know the official name of what they're going to call it, but it's set for September 16th. It's only $49. You get all day there. All the hosts that can come will be there. You'll be able to talk with them. And they'll do some tours during the daytime. And then at night, the Paranormal View will be doing their show live from there. And then there's also going to be investigations during the night. And it only costs you $49, which is not bad. So.
The September 26th of the Hillcon.
Yes. And I'll try and see if I'm going to be able to go there, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to or not. Two of them real close together might put a strain on me, but we'll see. I'll try and do the best I can. So with that, though, we do have a great show tonight. We're going to be talking about ghost towns, and we aren't talking just about the ghost towns, but haunted kind of ghost towns and other places too that are haunted. Barbara's got a lot. I know Jeff will have some and I've got some. So we should have a great, great discussion tonight talking about ghost towns. And I think what got us leaning that way, somebody had sent me a thing on a ghost town, and I sent it to Barbara, and we said, okay, we'll make a show out of it. So I know Barbara was looking stuff up on it. Did you look stuff up on that one, Barbara?
I didn't get a chance to. I have a ton of other stuff though.
It works better that way, don't it?
didn't get a chance to do much on that. Looking all sorts of ghost town stuff.
Oh, a lot. Well, good. I did get some stuff on it, though, so cool. We've got that also. Did you want to start off?
I was just going to say we should probably define ghost town. And a ghost town is defined as an abandoned village, town, or city, and it's usually one that contains substantial visible remains. A town often becomes a ghost town because the economic activity that supported it's failed. There's other natural or human-caused disasters, like flooding, government actions, uncontrolled lawlessness, for example, especially in the West, war, nuclear disasters. So it can be pretty much anything. The term can refer to cities that are still populated but sparse.
Yeah, there was a lot of them out west, which was like mining towns, gold, silver, whatever. And when those played out, the people usually left to go somewhere else. Yeah. And so that become then an abandoned ghost town. Yeah. So the one that I had out there to start with was about Bodie, California. And let's see what I got written here on Bodie. Bodie has an extensive history of hauntings and paranormal activity that has been known to spook even the most professional of the ghost hunting community. The most popular of these stories include that of the history of a man named Jim Kane. His home is said to be highly paranormal. Mr. Kane hired a servant that was Chinese to care for his home. Eventually, this lady was fired because of the rumors that she was Mr. Kane's mistress. This disgraced the woman, and she was never able to find work. As a result of her devastating experience, she took her own life. It has been said that the spirit of this servant still frequents the home of Mr. Kane. Some of the experiences include the sound of music and other noises from a particular bedroom, the face of a woman appearing at a window on the second story, individuals feeling as if they are being held down, suffocating being experienced, doors opening and closing on their own, extreme fear with no rational explanation, and the ever popular Mendocini. What is that?
What? How's it spelled?
Mendocini.
Mendocini.
It says, home is this real ghost town in California has been noted in people experiencing the following. Oh, that, I guess this is another home. It says the sounds of children laughing and playing, the sounds that reflect a full social event, and the smells of foods cooking, particularly Italian and basis. It is rumored that Bodhi was cursed. It is believed that the individual spirits of the community come together as one to protect what is left of the town. If someone attempts to remove any aspect of this spirituality-inclined community, they are doomed to misfortune until they return that which they have taken. It is not unusual for the park officials to receive mail which returns even the smallest of items that individuals have taken from the community. Many even include full letters of apologies to both the physical and spiritual beings that reside in this real ghost town.
There's a lot of places that happens. There's like beaches, certain beaches, like in Hawaii. Obviously, don't take photos of Robert the Doll without his permission. Where people say, whatever. And then, surprise, you know, and everything goes to in a handbasket, as it were, and they send it back saying, sorry, our bad, we won't do it again.
Yeah, we won't do it again, huh?
Yeah, Bodhi was a mining town. They found gold, because there's a lot of it up in Northern California still. It's area called Bodhi Bluff. And there was a mill established there, and the town grew. And so there were, by the 1880s, there was Bodhi was quite popular. There was, you know, families, miners, a lot of robbers, a lot of stone store owners, gunfighters, prostitutes. At one time in Bodhi, there were 65 saloons.
Yeah. Wow. So essentially, they just didn't have anybody sober at any given moment, I guess.
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah. It's quite a town, yeah. And there are people who try to take things, especially from the graveyard. And why, I don't know, but
oops,
that was just really stupid to do. You don't take things.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything in a graveyard that I would want.
No, but it's kind of part of Americana history, and it's, you find it's a pretty substantial graveyard, too, from what I understand.
Well, you know, I guess some things that valuable could have been buried with some of the people.
Well,
I would think most likely referring to like maybe little stones or pebbles left on top of gravestones.
Or, you know, sometimes people will try to pick up a piece of metal that fell off from one of the gravestones. Because of the climate out here, you don't find many wood stones, but they do make some out of iron bars, like crosses and what have you.
Ooh.
So, it's common.
Wow.
So, you're not going to find just, you know, a little, you know, ghost of a little, you know, school marm there. It's going to be opium overdoses, miners, probably a lot of gunfight victims. Yeah.
Gunfights,
yeah. People things over.
Had a lot of saloons and people
getting
killed, robbing.
Killed over gold, yeah.
Yep. So, yeah, I'm sure it was pretty rough back in those days there.
Pretty much.
I think they had like as much as 10,000 people living in Bodhi at one time.
Probably at least are people coming through there, yeah.
Right. did have pictures online, and it still showed when they ended up leaving. I believe they just left everything the way it was.
Yeah, looks like they just walked out the door.
Yep. There's still, I guess, some of the gambling halls and bars still had pool tables sitting in it.
Yeah.
Right. It's a national park now, so you can't just go there and take what you want. It is protected. So
yeah, you will get arrested, and there are people that that watch the town.
Are not ghosts.
Yeah.
You will get thrown in the jail and
up there. Yeah, but the pub rustic in the bars be just. Oh wait, no, I just.
That would be Jeff. Yeah.
Cool,
one of the other places that I had is called Garnet, Montana. Is it Garnet?
Like a gem, I guess.
Yeah, it's Garnet, G-A-R-N-E-T, Garnet, Nevada.
Nevada.
Montana. No, Garnet, Montana. It says Ellen Baumler, the Montana Historical Society's resident ghost resident ghost whisperer and author, wrote that at night, at midnight, people have heard ghostly fingers striking piano keys with the music floating across the empty buildings. She said that especially during the winter months, Garnet visitors see visions and hear unearthly noises. Late at night, the spirits of Garnet come out to play in the moonlight. Baumler wrote in Montana Chillers, sometimes in the deep winter quiet, a piano tinkles in Kelly's saloon and the spirits dance to ghostly music. Men's voices echo in the empty rooms, but the moment a living human hand touches the building, the noises stop.
It sounds like the.
I was just saying, if the piano's tinkling, I guess it's got its own washroom.
Cat was saying, was going to ask if it was Garnet.
Garnet.
What?
Yeah.
There's other hotels that do that too. The Stanley Hotel. In their lobby, I believe that the owner's wife taught piano in the lobby piano. So you'll hear that going on several occasions, and the people go into the to the room, and nobody's playing the piano. Awesome.
Wow. Yeah. You know, the United States isn't the only place that has these types of places. And I know Barbara's got quite a few of some of the other places, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, ghost towns are ghost towns. Yeah. They're pretty much everywhere you want to go.
Well, you got some pretty famous ones.
Well, yeah. Though. I mean, because we talk about that natural and human disasters are causes of ghost towns, there, of course, is Chernobyl. Which, if I could get to my link, was it 1994? I believe it's 31 years now for Chernobyl.
That would be
1994, was it?
Is that
20-some
years?
It's been a long time.
Something like that. It's way back there, though. Yeah.
I don't think I closed that link. At least I thought I did.
And that was in Russia?
Well, it's actually in the Ukraine.
I think so.
Yeah. I think Chernobyl was in Russia.
Ukraine, which was part of Russia.
Right. Yeah, right.
I'm trying to remember. 1998.
Yeah.
And of course, I'm sorry, it was 1986, April 26, 1986, 3 years ago.
Okay.
And the cool thing about that was they didn't notify anybody for 2 days that there was a problem.
It's not like they're going to notice it until they start bleeding from different orifices.
People start keeling over, and then, you know, and it was in Ukraine and Belsaris. There was about 1,600 square miles of area that is no longer habitable, except by the critters, which are starting to come back.
When you say 1,600 square miles, just think of what that would be like if it was a place here in the States. I mean, if it had been somewhere around Cincinnati, 1,600 square miles, that would take up a big chunk of area.
Well, you have to understand, is it Alamogara? Where we first exploded the atomic bomb, that area as well is still radioactive.
Yes, it is. And matter of fact, they had filmed some movies out in that area that wasn't too far from where that took place. And a lot of the actors ended up getting cancer and stuff. John Wayne did. And there was quite a few of them where they filmed a lot of movies there.
What always blew me away was some of the newsreels where they showed the bomb would explode and you'd have all the grunt soldiers sitting there with the goggles on so they wouldn't go blind. And then it's like, okay, guys, just march through there. We want to see what happens to you. And they're like, okay. And they just get up and they want. I'm like, no. No, you shouldn't be doing that.
Well, all remember the old duck and cover movie.
Oh, God, yes. I'm actually old enough that happened. And when I was in elementary school, they actually did duck and cover.
Yeah, they teach you. Duck and get under your desk.
Yeah, that's going to help a lot.
That's going to save you there.
And if you're outside, get it's in like, a ditch and cover yourself with a newspaper. Yeah.
or a cardboard box or something. But that was, I don't remember them ever saying what to do outside. They always seemed to imply it would always happen when you were in school. Like they'd be waiting for you to be in school, like, okay, you know. Oh, he's under his desk, you know. That's like the monster in the closet. You get under the covers, we can't do anything now. Under the covers.
That was it when you was a little kid and you was in bed and got scared, you get under the covers and knowing that it can't get you then.
Yeah. It's like
Well we all have this
hard legal loopholes.
We all have this idea that our school desk could take care of anything. I mean,
oh yeah, let's drop a few, you know, 18 wheelers on it. That'll take care of it.
You know, tornado, get under your desk. Earthquake, get under your desk. A bomb, get under your desk.
Well, I've read now they're saying, you know, getting under the desk, not probably a good thing. Like in earthquakes, the thing to do is almost be next to your desk so that when debris falls, it'll create sort of like it would come at an angle. So you wouldn't be crushed flat. It would leave like a space that hopefully all your limbs would still be attached. But yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Chernobyl is still pretty hot.
You know,
this year marks the half-life of cesium-137, so that was probably the worst of it.
Yay, happy birthday!
Happy half-life!
Yeah, they, when I was working for GE, working with nuclear fuels, I used to handle all that stuff and load rods with the pellets and all that stuff, and they would so often have tests where you'd have to go outside, you know, and in groups, and they would have to come and call your name, make sure everybody was there and everything. But you did it on the outside. They had big ditches dug, and you would be down in those, and we figured out that what it is if they ever did have a reaction, you'd get outside in those things, and they'd have bulldozers come and just cover everybody.
Probably pretty much. I mean, you don't know what happened to the people that were in Chernobyl. when it happened. I'm assuming they left the bodies because they were so heavily contaminated they couldn't be taken out.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. So yeah, when I asked.
So when you were doing that, Henry, did you ever end up having to do like a Silkwood shower where they would just drag you into the shower and scrub you down?
Well,
like
no, you had change rooms. So before you would go in where the powder was and the pellets were, supposedly, you put on coveralls. And just go in and do that. And you come back out and they would have Geiger counters and you could test yourself or whatever. Most people didn't even do that. But once a year you had to be put into they had a truck. It would come and put you in this thing and run you through it and test your whole body for contamination, see how much radioactivity
you had
in you.
Well, you had dosimetry badges, right?
Yes, you had those that you had to wear also.
Oh, they were like the little mood ring thing that would turn color if you were get too hot?
No, just a little badge in it, and it would absorb the radiation and it'd tell you how much, or tell them how much you'd received or whatever.
Sort of like you can stop saving this guy's unemployment insurance payment.
Yeah, well, when I worked out into the warehouse, the stuff would come in to the plant as a liquid, and it would be then turned into a, or it would come in as a gas, I guess, and it would be turned into a liquid and then into a paste and then into a powder. Once it was turned into a powder, it would be in 5-gallon buckets, and it would come out of the shop in there into this little warehouse where I worked a lot. And you just take and put them on a pallet, and you could put four to a pallet, and they was all 1 foot apart. You couldn't have them close together. And, I mean, there was lots of times you'd throw them up on a pallet or something, the lid would come off, some powder would spill out. You just put the lid back on it and go on.
Oh, very nice.
So, you know, I mean,
it's dark today.
Exactly. Now, I saw there was a couple of these shows. I think one of them was hosted by John Noble, where they talked about like the fringest, scariest aspects of science and history. And back when radium was first used, and they used to make the watches, the radium watches, where the numbers would glow in the dark. They had women. This is like in either the late 1800s or early 1900s. These women who were painting them by hand with the radium, and they would smooth out the bristles on their brushes with their lips.
Oh my!
Really?
And they thought it was cool to go out to like almost blacklight. They had essentially blacklight clubs, and they thought it was high fashion. They would paint their teeth with the radium.
No, and then they'd glow. Then
That was for sale too. The radium,
it was just like
yep.
And they were just like, well, you know what you're doing, I guess. Nobody cared. They never, you know, the companies got away with it. They never had any kind of they were never brought to trial or anything. It's like, oh, these women got sick, oh well.
Marie Curie's laboratory notebooks are still radioactive, and that's how long it's been.
It stays that way. I've known people that would take those pellets home with them in a little vial.
Great.
I've known that, and they said that you could you'd get more radiation flying from New York to Los Angeles than you would working around that stuff. And
oh yeah, they always said that.
I asked them one time, well, what does this do to you? You know, over a period of time. And they said, well, we don't know yet, we're still studying on that, and so that's why I didn't work there anymore.
That's why we hired you.
So find out.
Well,
there's still a camera lens that they call the radioactive lens that was manufactured with a certain glass processing procedure that the lens was radioactive. Not very much, but it was still radioactive.
Well,
they must have taken some interesting photos. Wouldn't they all be foggy? Wouldn't they just not pick up anything well?
No, the lens is actually fine, and they're very good lenses. They're just a little hot. That's all.
I assume if there's a Geiger counter around me, it would probably still go off. I was running the grinders one day, and you know, it's where you can grind the pellets down to a certain size to fit into the rods, because I used to have to load the pellets into the rods, and but also had to grind them sometimes too. So, but one day after work, I was cleaning the grinder and caught the rag caught the wheel, and it pulled my hand into the grinder. And it kind of, you know, flattened out my finger just a little bit on the edge, which the rag jammed it up and stopped it. Otherwise, I'd have probably lost my hand. But anyway, it ground uranium down into my finger, and I had to go for a week and scrub it, you know, and try and get it clean and healed. But there's still some of it in my finger. So I don't doubt probably a Geiger counter had set me off maybe.
Lovely. Anyway. Well, Chernobyl is actually, it's still sort of standing, but it's overcome now. And tourists are starting to go in. You can go in and visit. You have a certain period of time that you can be in the city proper before you have to come back out again. But there's
not so much camping,
no
though,
camping.
Apparently.
No swimming, although there are ducks and swans in the... in the pool that used to cool down the rods. There's beavers building dams in there, so it'll turn back into a bog one of these days. There's
wow.
foxes and deer. And,
of course, they're all gaining sentience.
Multiple
limbs.
The mushrooms are the ones that pick up and absorb most of the radiation, which, of course, the voles will eat, which means anything that eats voles will... probably munch on the radioactivity. But they seem to be thriving. The animals seem to be thriving. So.
Huh. Well, I would assume that they can probably adapt better than humans. I know animals can eat a lot of things that doesn't bother them that would bother us. So. I don't know if it's kind of digestive system that they have. I know some things that they do eat kills them kind of quickly, such as something that dogs like, which is like antifreeze. They'll lap it up.
Well, antifreeze, apparently, from what I read, the reason dogs lap it up is it's very sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And it... like kills them. The same with poinsettia plants that are very pretty, but cats eat them and that kills them. Dark chocolate is something you don't give to dogs, things
right.
like that.
Right. So what about the other stuff with Chernobyl?
Well, I don't think that there are, like the movie, mutant people living underground, but there. I know. I wish that there were, but fortunately.
I don't know how deep that place would have went underground. And if it was close to the reactors, the radiation from that probably would have killed them to start with. But if they was somewhere or another in some kind of lead safe shelter things, they might have been able to live.
Possibly.
I don't know.
There's a circus set up there with a Ferris wheel. I mean, it's all, of course, falling apart now, but everything's pretty much still there.
So it's like a regular fair that just comes to your town, sets up in your local Macy's and Walmart parking lot.
And all of a sudden, kaboom, you know, there's an explosion at the power plant. And, you know, a lot of the animals, I think, probably were okay because a lot of them have larger hunting grounds so they can go in and out of the area and probably aren't exposed 24/7. But they're not finding a lot of genetic mutations, which is interesting. But there would be more, but there aren't.
At least not externally noticeable.
Very true.
I mean, they could all have grown two hearts and become self-aware and like, there come the humans.
Turn
you
into
know.
Vampires at night, for all we know. Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
It's very interesting. But it's interesting, you know, look at photographs going through Chernobyl of... the schools, everything, everybody just dropped everything and left.
So who is the brave ones who actually went through there taking pictures?
Well, there's a lot of people that go through now and take photographs. You can. You wear badges.
Well, isn't,
you can still go in. The nuclear power plant itself is off limits, and it's buried under, what, about 10 feet of concrete now?
Oh, did they bury it?
They covered it.
There was a they said a movie where the climax, they went to Chernobyl to recover something. I don't know if it was nuclear material or some hidden fortune or something, but, it, you know, I can't remember what it was, but it was like a year or two ago, and it was one of these silly action movies that was, you know, where, you know, yeah, this isn't going to happen kind of stuff, but it was a fun little brainless action movie. But they all filmed it like it was really blue, and they made it look like it had it almost just happened, as opposed to, you know, oh, now it's just sitting here, which is pretty much what it probably does now. But they filmed it to look very intense and blue and like flecks in the air and everything.
Well, did they ever get the reactor shut down?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yeah. It shut down.
If not, a lot of people are getting a free electricity.
Like I said, they pretty much, you know, buried it in concrete. So it's for the next 5 or 10,000 years.
Yeah, 5 or 10,000 years. Yeah. And I think that's why the aliens are afraid of what we're doing to Earth would do to the out in space.
Their place, yeah.
Oh, I seen something on the news, and Barbara probably knows about it. They all of a sudden found a new planet in our solar
planet
system.
10.
In our solar system?
Yeah.
Was it Mondas or Tellus?
It's way, way out past the Kuiper Belt, past Neptune. So, you know, the orbit is probably minuscule. We're never going to see it, probably. But it...
So is this in the same elliptical orbit as Pluto or beyond Pluto? Because the thing that drives people crazy that Pluto got demoted is that mathematically, where they, the astronomer who figured out where the planets would be, and was correct on every one that hadn't even been found yet, had Pluto in that particular ellipse. So that's why Pluto should be still a planet, because it's in the right orbital path. So this is that next distant step, as it were.
And the cool thing about this, Jeff, is they have not actually seen it with a telescope yet. What they're looking at is
gravitational perturbations,
and orbit, so they can kind of tell that something's there, but they just can't see it yet. So it'll be interesting to see. Oh. And why we haven't picked it up with, say, like the probes that we've been sending to Saturn, Jupiter, et cetera.
It may not have any reflective material. May be just like made of ebony or something, or obsidian.
It's it might reflect a little bit of light from the sun, but it's out there so far that it's probably not going to see much.
Right. Yeah, it's way out there.
But Planet 10 another... is like, buckaroo bums, I was right.
Well, yeah, but Doctor Who and Telos was there a lot earlier than that.
Oh, very true. Yeah. But they weren't in the eighth dimension.
I got another town before we go to break. It's located on the edge of Death Valley. And the town is Rhyolite. Rhyolite grew to a population of 10,000 at its peak. Founded in 1904, the town was basically born when ore was discovered in the area. In 1924, the last known resident died. But it is said you can still hear voices echoing through the decaying buildings. Hundreds of visitors and witnesses have reported eerie experiences here. The most famous and retold account tells of the spirit of a gold prospector who died in a town after he brought in a load of huge gold nuggets to be appraised. The legend has it he was poisoned by the barber, who then stole the gold. The ghost is commonly seen as a brown shadow with a big floppy hat wandering around town.
Huh.
So he's still looking for his gold.
It was Coalvine or Goldvine?
It was
Goldvine.
Goldvine, okay. I guess.
There's silver down there, too.
Well, it says, let's see, it was ore is what it says. So it could have been iron or whatever. It doesn't say what type.
Probably gold.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of it in that area.
Up here, so. You can find gold, but you also can find coal. I don't think there's any diamonds per se, but we have emeralds, sapphires. So.
Moof wanted to know if rhyolite is a rock.
Sounds like it.
It does sound like
it. Rhyolite is spelled R-H-Y-O-L-I-T-E.
Which still sounds like a rock.
Could be.
It is. And it is an igneous volcanic rock. Silica rich.
Okay. Would have that been considered ore?
Yeah.
I don't know what they used it for, but that could have been.
Quartz can be. Rhyolite, okay. Nevada. It's an actual town. The ghost town,
right.
In Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. Well.
So it doesn't see. Oh, they mentioned ghost town a lot, but I'm not seeing anything about it really being haunted as such. Oh, there's one little article.
Yeah, it was listed as a haunted ghost town.
Huh.
I don't reckon anybody's living there now. That's why most of the buildings are just pretty much about like Bodie.
I'm trying to figure out the building, what it was so special about that stone that made it.
Why they named that town?
It's why they wanted to mine it.
I don't know. And it wasn't founded till 1904, so no telling what they've been looking for then or using it for then. So I think we don't have to, but if you want to, we can take a quick break. Otherwise, we got
keep on talking.
Lots to talk about.
All right, to figure out. The rock, greenish?
Yeah.
Oh, I see. Big chunks of yellow metal downright. So they thought it was gold. Okay.
Uh-huh. So it's almost like a form of pyrite.
Fool's gold, yeah.
Hmm. Well, it lasted from, 1904 to 1924, something like that, before the town went defunct. Okay.
I don't know. I guess anything that, was bright and shiny. There was a silver rush, too, but not as much.
So. A lot of places around through there did have mine for silver. Let's see here.
Like Virginia City. Or Nevada City,
Nevada, Virginia. That got one here on that. This well-known western town is legendary for its activity during the Nevada silver boom in 1859. The city grew to over 25,000 residents until the 1870s. Virginia City is one of the most popular ghost towns for visitors wanting to experience haunted activity. The most popular spot here is the Washoe Club, which back in the 19th century was a corrupt men's club that facilitated prostitution and other illegal activity.
That's the one with the floating duck in it. The Washoe Club.
Yeah. Says there are three known entities who lurk the staircases and rooms of the Washoe Club. A young girl who was killed by a predator in the basement, a young blonde prostitute named Lena, who was murdered in one of the third floor rooms in 1870. And the man who killed the prostitute on the third floor and then took his own life on the second floor. So the Washoe Club is kind of haunted, you might say.
In Nevada cities, too. I mean, it was part of there. And then, yeah, and, the Cartwrights moved in.
Right, and they straightened everything out. Yeah.
Which, so that's in Nevada, yes. Though, right?
Yeah. Which, built in 1860, Nevada City is a popular filming location for several Western movies. But many visitors have sworn they've heard voices in some of the supposedly empty buildings. Employees have reported finding bedding rumpled in the famous Sedman House. A tourist allegedly once remarked that he thought the little girl in Victorian dress in the front yard of the Sedman House was a nice touch, only to find out that there was no such little girl. One story from Nevada City in particular is actually quite incredible. It is described by distinctlymontana.com. A global stage production crew filmed a scene of Henry Ibsen's Enemy of the People in Nevada City Hotel's saloon. The temperature dipped below zero in the unheated hotel. The guest rooms and corridors upstairs and down were locked. 50 cast, crew, and local extras crowded into the bar. State employee John Ellingston remembers it well. The director called quiet on the set, and the camera began to roll. Everyone held their breath, afraid to make a sound. Suddenly, there were footsteps in the room above. "Cut! Who's up there?" yelled the director. The crew members and I rushed upstairs. When I unlocked room 7, the room over the bar, it was dark, cold, and empty. But the floor kept creaking slowly and deliberately during the entire filming. It was even captured on the tape.
I never had anything happen like that when I was in a stage production of Enemy of the People back east, but...
You wasn't in the haunted place, was you?
I was not. Well, ironically, I was the theater that I literally grew up on its stage. Was the Studio Playhouse over in Montclair, New Jersey, and I would be in there because when I wasn't in a cast, and sometimes even when I was, I would do a lot of the show's sound designs. And this is back when they had just analog, reel to reel. And vinyl records that you transfer onto the reels so that you could have the cues, sound cues in order. And you'd physically splice the tape with leader in between them so you knew where your cues were. And I'd be in there sometimes 1, 2 in the morning working away with just a ghost light on the stage. And nothing, no sounds, nothing ever happened. I was like, what kind of theater that doesn't have a ghost? Because we didn't.
And you still never seen anything?
Not there, no. I never heard anything. It's not like, you know, I would love to have had, you know, footsteps come up saying, oh, someone else is in here with me. Who could that be? And then there'd be no one there, but not even footsteps, nothing. It was just this lifeless, no, non-ghosty theater. Which is a shame. I mean, one of my favorite comic mentors passed away, and I kind of half hoped, I thought, if anybody was going to haunt this place, it would be Larry Brady. It would be great because he was one of the funniest, most creative people that we ever had in the troupe. And I still miss him terribly. But he, I wouldn't be surprised if he would have just showed up and, you know, started walking around.
Wow.
Cool.
Well, Barbara, you got another one of those from somewhere else?
From somewhere else?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot.
Well, one from somewhere.
Well, there's... I was still talking about...
Which one?
About Kennecott, Alaska.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a copper mining town at one time. 300 people in the mill town, 300 in the mines, about $200 million worth of copper out of it. But the copper sort of tapped out, and they just pretty much left everything.
Uh-oh. Did I lose you, Barbara?
Oh, I almost thought it was me that was been dropped.
Oh, let me look and see here what happened. No?
Am I here?
Yeah, you're here now. I don't know where you went to. It didn't. Go ahead.
The copper mines. Pretty much tapped out. There's rumors that there's still people inhabiting the hotels, et cetera. That nobody goes to that town. Nobody wants to be in that town at all. People try to stop there to visit, and they tried to resurrect the town because it's beautiful. It's still in really good shape, and it is being upkept, but nobody wants to stay there because they keep hearing people.
Yeah. Really?
Looks like a beautiful spot. Huh. It would be a really nice summer hotel resort, but they can't get anybody to stay there.
And where's this place close,
it's
close to?
It's probably close to Juneau.
So it would be one of those places that you could probably only get to by boat?
Or plane. Yeah. Water plane.
Yeah. Or. Wow.
I know. That could be cool.
I've seen some places like that. They had some things on TV about, getting a place or buying a place in Alaska, property or whatever. And some of the places that they had, you could only get to by boat or by plane. And the prices on the things were astronomical. I don't know if I'd really...
Why would they be that impressive when you can't get your local Ralph's or something? You know, you can't get your local grocery store.
Well, they in the little towns there, they would probably have stuff. And I don't doubt you could probably have a little car or whatever, truck, to get back and forth to the town once on the island. And they probably brought those over by boat or on a ferry some sort.
Probably really infuriate Amazon, just order things individually instead of when big group packages, so that they constantly have to come out over and over and over again.
Well, they would be shipped on the boat coming over.
Oh yeah.
So
I guess you get used to it. I mean, it's like the islands up around Maine where people live year round.
Yeah.
Doesn't Nantucket have in Rhode Island have a few of those like little communities on islands and stuff?
Yeah, they sure do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which would be nice. Yeah. Zombie proof.
I love these photos. You know, but you get like these photos and memes like on Twitter and Facebook where like, you know, when you want to like, you know, have some alone time, and it'll have like this megalith lifted out of the ocean and this little house in the on top of it. Like, how did they even get that up there or build it up there, let alone how do you get there? How do you parasail in or something?
And there
or what?
Are... like almost out of the water, out of the ocean, residents that were built for workers. They're all abandoned now, and it would be really interesting to see. But they had looked almost like that Doctor Who prison, where there was a center courtyard sort of thing. The last one where he was imprisoned, that castle thing.
Hellbent. Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Out in the middle of the ocean, it'd be interesting.
Well, don't they pump up sand and build an island, kind of?
Not always. I mean, there are islands that are simply islands. I remember going to New York State with somebody once, and the trouble is depth can be deceiving, and it looks like, oh, no problem. You know, I was able to swim about halfway there saying, I'm not sure I can make this. You know, I'd be a lot safer to actually turn back than to keep going. It was much farther away than we thought. Certainly I thought. But on the boat, we thought, oh, we'll just swim. And then not so much.
And then, of course, the best haunted island ever, Paveglia. Paveglia?
What's the name of it?
It's off the coast of Venice. And it was used for plague victims. It was like a quarantine place, although you pretty much went out there and you're dead.
I've seen that. I've seen people in boats going around the island. And they still got big houses or whatever on the island, but nobody lives there, right?
It was a hospital for the plague victims.
Yeah.
Then it turned into sort of a mental asylum for a while. And now it's kind of, I think it's a restricted area. I'm not sure that you're allowed out there very much anymore.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think some people's been able to go in and investigate, but I'm sure it was kind of cost a lot of money to be able to do that.
It was a quarantine station from 1793 to 1814. And rumors are stating that 50% of the soil is composed of the remains of the dead. It was a crematorium.
Really? Wow.
Crematorium later. Yeah.
Wow. And there's actually a little series of islands, isn't it? It's not just one island.
The island is the biggest one, I believe. And there are smaller.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if they actually had plague victims on them. But then Venice is sinking, so who knows how large the islands were originally anyway?
Hmm.
There might very well be.
Yeah, that could have been part of one of them islands that's sunk that nobody can find anymore.
Could be. Because then Venice is sinking quite fast, so. You want to go? Go now.
Oops. Let's see here. We got another one of those places. It's called Goldfield, Nevada. Was that you, Jeff?
No, that was a motorcycle outside.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, we got people.
I was sitting there wondering what the heck that was.
When it comes to haunted ghost towns, Goldfield should always be near the top of the list. Goldfield began when gold was discovered nearby in 1902. The town died out by 1920 and became known as one of the most haunted towns in the West.
Everything is the most haunted town in the West.
I know. The Goldfield Hotel has been the site for many investigations by ghost hunting crews, as it is said to be haunted by the spirit of a prostitute named Elizabeth. Evidently, hotel owner George Wingfield had grown fond of Elizabeth, and upon finding out she was pregnant with another man's child, became so enraged that he chained Elizabeth to the radiator inside of room 109. According to spiritsspeak.com, there she stayed, supplied with nothing more than food and water until she gave birth, at which time it is said that George took the baby and threw it down an abandoned mine shaft, the same mine shaft that the hotel is said to be built on. After the birth of the child, Elizabeth vanished, never to be seen or heard from again. To this day, it is said that room 109 is still haunted by Elizabeth.
Why would he waste months if he was going to vanish both of them? When he could have just said, are you pregnant? Let's introduce you to this little mine shaft over here. Bye.
I don't know. It didn't say that he killed her. Just said he killed the baby. So.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So I don't know. It's a possibility. But then that's the ghost tales. You don't know. It's just
tales. There's a lot of
tales.
That. There's a mine out here called the Black Diamond Mine. And it's not too far away from here, but there's a rumor that several children were killed down in the mine. So there's the story of the White Witch of the mine. So she looks over the children. And, you know, children who visit the mine, because it's a tourist area now, are said to have seen her. So, yeah.
Hmm.
Mine shafts, I guess, are... Yeah.
Well, kids... Right. Kids are able to see things a lot of times that we don't.
I don't know what the labor laws were back then, but I'm sure that there were children who did work the mines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't doubt that one bit. Cheap labor.
Yeah.
So.
Now, interestingly enough, I'm going through one of the sites CC gave me, and apparently there's a county jail annex of which I had no knowledge, and it's right near where I lived. It's called the Essex County Jail Annex in North Caldwell, New Jersey. I'm like, I know where North Caldwell is. I know where all the Caldwells are. They're right by where I used to live in Montclair and Verona. And apparently it was built in 1873, expanded over the years to include auditorium, hospital, cafeteria. Much was closed down in the 1970s, abandoned for good in the late 1990s. That was around the time I left. So maybe it was still in operation, which is maybe not why I heard of it. And then it was left to decay and vandalism, thrill seekers, and it just indicates that it was empty. I guess it may not be haunted. It probably is haunted, but interesting. I'm going to have to check that into that a little more.
Hmm. Wow.
Let's see.
Because there was a large asylum that, you know, you weren't supposed to break in. Of course, being in my 20s, I had no problem doing that. And that was in West Caldwell. And I believe I've heard that it's since been finally torn down, which is such a shame because it was a magnificent edifice. But you had to be really careful because there was one main dirt road that went to it, and there was a functioning hospital across the street. And if they saw you drive up there, they just call the cops on you and they'd come up. I was able to somehow manage to talk our way out of cops saying, we're lost. We're trying to find Pompton Turnpike, you know, which, and you're like, you're trying to get me to believe. I'm like, that's, you know, you notice the New York State plates, because my friend Dan was driving and he was from out of state. We're like, we're just lost. We don't know where we are. Where are we? So he couldn't disprove that we were not doing what we were saying. So he's like, arr. So he's all snarly about it and let us go.
Hmm. So did you see anything?
No, that particular day. Well, I never saw anything anyway, but that particular day, I, no, we didn't actually get into that particular day. but I had been in there before, and essentially it's like, I was down like what would have been the boiler room cellar, which had all that Eddie Krueger-esque kind of Freddy Krueger-esque, pipes and things like that. I never really got into the main area. I would have liked to have examined that a little bit more. But I wasn't a ghost hunter at the time, so.
Still cool.
Hmm.
Yeah.
It was very cool.
Now, you've heard of North Brother Island, right?
North what?
North Brother Island. It's in the, I get off of New York City.
Is that near like Rikers
well,
Island or something?
So. It's north of that.
Oh, okay.
Bronx area.
I know where Rikers Island. Is.
East River. Okay.
Yeah. So I didn't do a whole lot of East Rivering, apart from occasionally taking the tram across because it was cool to take the tram. It was like the big skylight thing.
In East River, where a lot of the gangsters
with the fishies. Yeah.
Yeah.
North Brother Island was another quarantine hospital where people like the likes of Typhoid Mary were quarantined. It almost looks like it might have been the idea for Shutter Island. Because lots of brick. Now it's just a bird sanctuary. People can't get in there. So, but the architecture of the hospital is beautiful.
So, who was Typhoid Mary?
She spread typhoid, but her name was Mary.
She was a carrier, but she never had it. I mean, she wouldn't contract it. She was immune to it, but she was a carrier and she spread it to others. She was actually a maid to a number of very affluent homes, and they would all start dropping dead. And she's like, well, I have no idea what's going on, because she never had any symptoms or showed any signs. And eventually they tested her, like, oh, this is not good. You know, and they locked her up pretty much without any due process whatsoever, and said, sorry, you're, you know, too much of a danger. We can't let you out. And so she was essentially the first kind of a prototype for Guantanamo,
forced,
I guess.
Forced quarantine, which they did to a lot of people. You know, leper islands are common.
She lived the rest of her life out there, huh? That'd be bad. Because generally the people that they're putting on that island then is all people who has typhoid, and they're dropping like flies, and she's still going right on.
Probably
wouldn't have been just typhoid. It would have been anything that they would have considered a contagion. It finally was abandoned in the 60s. So it had a long life, evidently.
Wow. Yeah, I had never heard of that one.
Mary Mallon was her full name.
But they don't let anybody on that island now at all?
I don't think so, no.
It'd be neat if you could go over there and investigate. Of course, you might be afraid of picking up typhoid
or other stuff.
Yeah.
Oh well. Yeah, that's not something you want to go through their duty free shop.
Really?
No.
Be the germ free duty free. And that's part of the problem in going to ghost towns, Chernobyl, wherever, is you really got to watch what you're picking up.
Oh yes.
Oh Lord. Chernobyl would be nice, but I would be afraid of taking anything out of there without scrubbing it clean. I would love to visit. I think it would be incredibly interesting to photograph. But wow.
It would be. Yeah. And it's like working with uranium. As I said, the buckets had to be kept a foot apart. Now, inside the main building where it was like humidity controlled, they had a warehouse where buckets just sat right next to one another. Didn't matter what enrichment it was or anything. They just all sat right next to one another. And that's because the climate and humidity was all controlled in it. Outside, you didn't really want to have it closer than a foot from one can to another, and you didn't want it in water. That was a bad thing.
Well, it would be hot enough that it would boil the water, wouldn't it? That's why how they actually used it to create steam generation or something, wasn't it?
It only when it comes contact close enough one can to another to where the molecules start hitting one another and causing chain reaction.
Yeah, that the cans are kind of not really much of a barrier in this case. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it could be metal can or plastic bucket. They had them in both. So
it was like having your own little CERN acceleration chamber.
Yeah, you don't want that though. So
it's like duck and cover. Put that newspaper over you. It'll take care of it.
I don't think ducking and covering would help.
My windbreaker is fine.
I got my white uniform on, my cover.
Exactly.
Don't that help?
The lab coat.
Oh, it's funny. When I was doing when I was doing the tension experience late last year, the participants had to wear essentially biohazard suits as part of the experience, not only because some of them got a little messy during the experience, but it was part of the creep factor. And all I can think of is I don't see how these would really protect apart from like liquid hazardous materials, like, you know, blood spray, or if you were, you know, doing any kind of forensic investigation. But if you were like dealing with like nuclear material, it would not be much of a, you know, no more safety than tissue paper.
Well, forensically, it's not, you're not protecting yourself from that. You're protecting the evidence from you.
So,
that's the other way around.
Kind. Yeah.
And in this case, it's, Although I don't know if you were in, were you in an unused warehouse? Was that?
Well, it was a warehouse we were using.
So
yeah, I mean, it was
clean.
Rented out. Yeah, but there were aspects in which certain liquids occasionally would take place, and liquid paraffin, match, wax, and different materials, and the occasional, you know, stage blood and such. It's cool because I keep coming across, I'll sometimes do a search and I'll still come across blogs of people who went through, and, you know, sometimes weeks later, they're still going through post-traumatic stress syndrome about how intense it was, because it was really, from an actor's point of view backstage, we were like, wow, this, you know, they're really getting into it, you know. And some people, it was great because there was a safe word that they would use. And there were people who actually would use it. They were like, this is too intense. I cannot deal with it. And it wasn't like there's anything raw, scare in your face kind of stuff. Mostly, I mean, like less than 1%. But most of it was all psychological horror and more of the, it's like the thing most people are afraid of going to the dentist, not because of the pain they're going to experience, but the anticipation of it.
Yeah.
And here there wasn't any real pain. There was some discomfort and a lot of in your head discomfort and a lot of self actualization on occasion that was just, you know, would the most scary thing somebody can show someone else is a mirror sometimes when they actually look in introspectively on themselves. That can be horrifying. And I mean, the genius behind that show is incredible. And it's still one of the best gigs I've ever had to date. And I can't imagine, I'm saying, even how, if I were to become a successful movie actor, you know, working actor, that I actually was able to continue working and get a regular paycheck and finally be financially comfortable, but I'd still be working. I can't picture anything equaling the coolness of working on the tension experience.
Hmm.
I wish that had been filmed.
I wish it would have, huh? Let's see. How about the place in Alabama? As the first state capital of Alabama, the town of Cahaba was founded in 1818. The town was a hub of commerce for the cotton industry until many businesses began to move to cities with easier access, like Mobile and Selma. Many ghost stories have since developed about the old antebellum town of Cahaba, the most famous being Pegu's Ghost. I guess that's the way it's pronounced, P-E-G-U-E apostrophe S. Pegu's Ghost.
Or Pegway.
Yeah. Well, one or the other. The story goes that the spring of 1862, a young lady and gentleman entered a maze of cedars, and after reaching the center of the labyrinth, suddenly found themselves staring at a large, white, luminous ball that hovered a few feet above the ground. According to www.com.com Cahaba.com, this ball would dart first on one side of the walk and then on the other. Approach close enough to almost touch them. Recede and disappear in the shrubbery, to suddenly be seen again floating beside them. The gentleman tried to reach out and grab the ball, but it flew away. This apparition appeared to other parties in the town and became known as the Pegasus Ghost.
Nice. Yeah, that, Cahaba. Yeah, it was a center for trading and transporting of cotton. It also had quite a few yellow fever epidemics.
Yes. So there's just a ghost town now.
And evidently there is a sighting of a ghostly orb.
Yes, because that was pointed out many times where people see that. One of those mysterious lights. Yep. Mr. Pagu. No, it's not Mr. Pagu. That's what they got in the chat room.
It looks like a French name. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah.
Is that the way it's pronounced? Okay.
Sounds like something a chicken would say. Bagay.
Well, they had a lot of French down there in the South way back then, so it could be French names.
Yeah. Well, it also evolved into Creole as sort of French-esque.
And Cajun.
Right. Yep.
Yeah.
Let's see. Settled in 1878, the town was originally known as Forest City. It was built to house railroad men and miners as well as hardy women. The town officially died when the post office closed in 1952. The ragged ghost of Annabelle Stark, or Dirty Annie, is said to lurk here, causing temperatures to suddenly drop in rooms while their doors slammed shut. In the late 1970s, a skier whose family rented a winter cabin near St. Elmo reported seeing the hotel's ghost. The woman was skiing down Poplar Street at dusk, and as she paused by the Home Comfort Hotel, her eyes were drawn to a second-story window. She was startled to see a very attractive and shapely girl in a white dress framed in the window glass. She appeared to be holding back the curtains and looking out. At first, the skier assumed it was merely a trick of the light. She knew the owner of the place, who had the only keys to the building, was away on vacation, so no one else had been in the building. St. Elmo is what it's called now. Was Forest City.
Dirty Annie. It kind of makes you wonder how people got those names.
Yeah, whether somebody just give it to them or if there was somebody with that name. I wonder if they got some kind of history or from old newspapers
or
something.
Well, I know at Tombstone there is Big Nose Kate, who was Katie Elder. Right. But, yeah, mm-hmm. They had really odd names.
Kat said, Dirty Annie. Said, Gunsmoke? Said, was there a Dirty Annie on there? Had a mule
that
and
could
wagon?
Well, Miss Kitty, obviously.
But she said, oops,
Dirty
Sally.
Sally.
Yeah, she said, oops,
being her,
Sally.
Being her name was Stark, she just wanders around telling everyone winter's coming.
Yeah. Lots of goodies.
Thanks.
Okay. You got one?
No, I was just saying, I think so.
No.
And then, of course, we can talk about Centralia, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
There, the fire in the coal mine.
Yes.
It just amazes me. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just saying, everyone, most people in pop culture think of that. They hear that and they just think Silent Hill. Because that's essentially what Silent Hill is based on, that community.
Mm. So 1962, the fire started, and it's expected to burn for another 250 years.
It's a coal mine still burning underground. How many people died in it?
I don't know if anybody actually died in the mine.
Well, how did the fire start? Do you know what type of coal it is?
Burnable.
A lot of it's burnable.
I don't know if there's a difference in
coal. I know there's a place in North Dakota that you can go to. They have it kind of roped to where you can't get too close to it, but it's been burning for years and years and years, and there's no sign of it stopping, but it's a coal vein underneath the ground that's burning, and you can see smoke rising up and red and stuff. It's a lignite coal mine, and it's still burning, and that's in North Dakota.
I guess there is no way to put it out, per se.
No, not really. Burning up our coal, we might need that sometime.
Charcoal briquettes.
Yeah.
It does not give any indication as to what exactly started the fire.
So it's still burning.
For another 250 years, yeah, that's all.
Wow. And where's
Centralia,
that located?
Pennsylvania?
At? Oh, I mean,
think
where's
that's
that
northeast
close to?
If I'm not mistaken.
Northeast is, I would assume that's probably
closer
in the
yeah.
mountains. Yeah. Okay.
And you can't live there. The odor and the fumes would be intolerable.
Probably acid or acrid.
Extremely.
Yeah. Wouldn't be able to breathe. Yeah. Hmm.
Plus, you got all those crazy things happening when the sirens go off. So. Yeah.
Oh, there's sinkholes and fumes, and I guess it scorched 140 acres already. So I'm assuming that the ground is extremely hot.
Did you say it started in 1962?
Yeah.
And burning for another 250 years. Would they outlaw that mine then if a government declares no more coal?
I don't know what you could do. I mean, you couldn't go in that. Eventually it's going to collapse, I would assume.
Somebody from government would go up there and tell it to stop. That's how bright of people
sign
we have.
An executive order. Stop. Yeah. I ain't going to
work. Yeah, they'll do that. No. Yeah. Okay. You was talking about that's Pennsylvania, right? Got one in West Virginia. Founded in 1982. I'm sorry, in 1892, the town of Thurmond began as a railroad stop for the Chesapeake and Ohio Railroad. The town started to die off during the Great Depression. But it is said that there are spirits who still occupy the old buildings in town. One witness reported the visage of a general in full regalia before a train passed. After the train had passed, the general was gone. Well, I mean, he could have walked back off the platform while the train was passing. I mean, that's not a very good description, is it?
Mm.
So, I'd have to write that one off. Somebody might have been having a little bottle of something, snorting it.
I'm not sure what.
They could have been snorting the bottle before the train passed.
there is a lovely, this one's kind of interesting, is the city of Peru in Normandy.
Yes. In Normandy?
It was 17 acres of land, which I assumed it was a resort at one time. The original idea was to turn it into a holiday village with like 75 houses, a hotel, the whole idea of a seaside, around Normandy. He had it all set up in like 1992. They already started working on it, but it never happened. The investors were scammed and the guy ran away with all the money.
Really?
So the houses were plundered and they took a lot of artists there to filmmakers looked at it. I don't know if it was a backdrop for any American movies, but certainly a lot of French films were there. But they're about to bulldoze it.
Wow.
I don't know if I'd want to live that close to that kind of an area.
You talking Normandy. About
yeah.
the beaches yeah. at Normandy? A lot of death and dying there. I wonder if there's got to be places, because there's a bunch of little villages and towns right there on the coast at Normandy or by the beach and everything. Wonder if there's ever reports of ghost sightings and stuff in those places.
With that much, you would think that there would be. But I'm surprised nobody, well, within the paranormal community has brought it up.
You'd think somebody.
Because I'm sure somebody won't go there.
Well, you would think that somebody would want to go over there and do some sort of recordings or something from the beach and up on top of the cliffs and stuff like that. I'm sure there's got to be a lot of anguished people still there. So I don't know why you wouldn't get stuff. It's like Little Bighorn. I've always wanted to go up there, and I've heard people can get noises and sounds and different things like that from around there.
Okay. D-Day medics stilted by the little boy on the beach.
Oh, little the
boy
where?
On the beach.
No, it's I mean Normandy. Where? Normandy, okay.
Of course, it wasn't a ghost, but he's still haunted by the idea of... found a young, mortally wounded soldier grasping his last breaths. He was shot through the chest, and as he would breathe, the air would blow out of his chest, so he had to seal off the wound. That beach has so much violence attached to it that it just...
Yes. And that was a little boy got shot on D-Day?
I know the draft day or the enlistment age was what, 17?
Probably 18,
so
I would assume.
You know that some kids probably got in and lied about their age anyway, but
some did.
You would
yes.
think that there would be kids.
What was that? Was that American?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I don't see any. Doing a quick search, I don't see anything. But if there's ghosts at Gettysburg, I can imagine there's ghosts at Omaha Beach.
Yeah, you'd have to think that. I mean, there's ghosts just about at every battlefield from the Civil War.
Yeah, I don't know if it's off limits to tourists. I'm looking up now. To see. There is a museum there. And that's pretty much it. So you are allowed on the beach.
I think they have tours. The tourists can go down there on the beach. They can be up on top of the cliffs, and they have it all fixed up just for you to be able to get that experience, you might say, be able to see everything, how it took place.
It's the kind of place that would leave you with a bad taste in your mouth if you were any a little bit sensitive.
Ew. Stop licking things there.
That's psychic, icky thing. Yeah.
Well, going back to Barbara's place, San Francisco's rich cultural makeup, large immigrant population, and history of natural disasters like earthquakes have helped it develop a reputation as a mecca of all things haunted. Chinatown alone is home to countless ghost tours and creepy folklore. But the city also boasts a wealth of haunted hotels, mansions, and army bases. Of these, one of the most famous is the Queen Anne Hotel, which served as a school for girls in the 1890s and is said to be haunted by the ghost of its former headmistress, Mary Lake. There are also a number of stories concerning Mary Ann Pleasant, the so-called voodoo queen of San Francisco, who was a former slave and abolitionist who used a knowledge of the black arts to gain wealth and influence among the city's elite.
She was also a cook, and she was an amazing cook. And Marian Pleasant was a high society chef who made the rounds, and everybody loved her, and to the point where she started her own restaurant. She then set up and... because she was a color, she wanted to uplift the rest of the population. So she started her own businesses. I think she had laundry businesses. I can't remember what her husband did, but they both amassed a great deal of wealth. And a lot of that she put into the abolitionists.
Ah.
Yes.
Well, even the trendy San Francisco Art Institute, which is rumored to have been built on top of a graveyard that housed victims of the 1906 earthquake, is said to be the home of several ghosts who have frequently been seen climbing the stairs to a tower that overlooks the ancient cemetery. And the most haunted place in San Francisco, of course, is Alcatraz.
But the coolest thing we just found out is there are a ton of ships that were dry docked, and they're now starting to uncover.
They were dry docked. When during the earthquake? Or
I don't know if they were just during the earthquake, but... there's a lot of ships now that they're doing a lot of construction, and they're finding. So,
Were they still in the water, or were they dried up
land? I don't know if it had anything to do with the earthquake. But remember that San Francisco was only around the bay side of the peninsula. It wasn't around the ocean side. Because that is too much of a riptide, and you couldn't anchor ships there. So, and it was pretty much all beach. So it was just in the port. So Oakland, San Francisco, that area, the Barbary Coast.
So they're finding ships.
Awesome. But San Francisco is definitely not a ghost town.
Just a ghostly town.
Well, the rest of the ones that I've got are ghost in towns, you might say. They aren't ghost towns themselves, but there's a lot of haunted activity in these particular towns. Yeah. You had what was the other one in Japan?
Fukushima.
Was that Fukushima? You got something on that, don't you?
Just the fact that it's basically mirroring Chernobyl with the difference is that the plant is not contained.
And it's still active.
The city, they can go in for a little bit, and there is a gentleman who lives there who is taking care of the animals. He goes in every day to feed them because they're not allowed to leave. They're pretty much all radioactive at this point, too.
They're like, you can't eat us.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. And there's a lot of critters, and he takes care of all of them. But his days are numbered because, quite frankly, he's exposing himself to a large amount of radiation. The radiation that they went in to try to, with the drones, to go into Fukushima, are disabled almost within a half an hour. The radiation is that strong. It's destroying the drones even. That's not good.
Yeah. And is that like Chernobyl? How big was that? 1,600 square miles?
Well, Fukushima didn't explode, and it didn't put that much radiation into the air, except within, I think it's a 130-kilometer area. So that's not very big. Chernobyl really went volcano. It was spewing things everywhere. Fukushima's problem is most of it, because it's right by the water, because you use water to cool.
It's contaminating the ocean. That's not.
You get the same look that you had in Chernobyl, which is the earth is starting to take over the town again. So, you know, you'll see trees growing out of houses soon, I'm sure. But pretty much everybody had to leave everything behind.
And that's still active, so no telling how long that's going to be going on. And they haven't encased that in concrete either. So
No, they haven't shut it down. I mean, as far as I know, some of the towers are still standing and still producing energy. Is it 3 and 4 that are down? I believe, and compromised. They're still sending people in.
Really? To work in the plant or trying
to clean up? I think it's pretty much doomed.
Oh, yeah. I would assume that.
It's interesting to see how cities just sort of go by the wayside to these disasters. Pretty much that as opposed to the mine shutting down or stuff along those lines. I mean, the neatest cities in the world probably are covered in water because we've built dams and flooded a lot of cities.
You know, our time's just flying right on by for some.
Yeah.
Let's see here if I got, here's one. Portland, Oregon, has developed a reputation as the most haunted city of the Pacific Northwest, thanks to its bizarre history and high number of ghost sightings. One of the city's most famous haunted places is Pitcock Mansion, an ornate house that was built in 1914 by a wealthy businessman and his wife, both of whom died shortly thereafter. Visitors have claimed to have seen apparitions and heard footsteps coming from the empty rooms, and doors and windows will sometimes open by themselves. Weirdest of all, a portrait of Mr. Pitcock, the man who built the house, will inexplicably be found in different parts of the house, as though it can move itself from room to room. In addition to the Pitcock House, other portal haunted places include the Baghdad Theater, a movie theater built during the Roaring Twenties that supposedly houses a number of spirits, and the Willamette River, where in recent years a phantom rowboat has been spotted by several people. The most haunted place is Portland's coastal location, established it as a shipping hub and port of call for sailors during the 1800s. This eventually led to the rise of the practice known as Shanghaiing, wherein unsuspecting men and women were kidnapped from bars and hotels, shipped to the Orient, and impressed into slave labor or prostitution. Portland was notorious for this practice thanks to a series of labyrinth underground tunnels that run beneath the city streets, which were used by the Shanghaiers as a safe way to capture and transfer victims to the harbor without being seen. Today, the tunnels are said to be haunted by the ghosts of the people who were kidnapped, many of whom were never seen or heard from again.
But it's just not the tunnels that's cool. The thing about Portland, San Francisco, Sacramento, and I think Juneau, Alaska, or Fairbanks, Alaska, is they built roads on top, like maybe a story above the rest of the town. And so you have this underground city sitting there. Most of it's abandoned, but it's amazing. It's like a snapshot of the Old West.
Hmm. And it's just underground.
Because they built the road. It's a lot like King's Close in Scotland, where they built the road over another road and made it pretty much the second story, the first story of a house. Fascinating.
Hmm.
I would love to do that. There's something about subterranean areas that are cool.
I don't like them. I don't like basements. I don't like going in mines. I've always had a fear. You go in, you don't come out.
Well, it depends on where you walk, too. I mean, if you have a guide, I mean, when I went to Bisbee, Arizona, which is one of the most fascinating little towns I've ever been to, they have a guided tour of the copper mine, which is and the place itself. If you come from the north, from Tombstone, like we did, you go through this tunnel and you come out of the tunnel and it just, you know, how everything opens right up. There's not like a mountain on either side. All of a sudden you look to your left and there's this just like a insect hive of houses. And it's become this huge artistic community. So a lot of artisans and artists and such. But it's like a funnel. It's like a big crater, and all around the rises are these buildings, and it's like looking at a giant insect hive of human buildings. And across the road is where the copper mine was used, and they have, you know, tours, not ghost tours. And I wish I'd known at the time that the hotel we'd stayed at was a haunted hotel, or I would have said, do you have any ghost rooms? We'll stay in there. But, you know, we just took the room they gave us.
Yep. There's whole cities underground. In Queensland, Australia, there's a city that basically they carved underground because the surface was too hot. So the entire city exists underground.
And Australia? It does get hot over there. Yeah.
Well, the Navajos, the Pueblo Indians, all built into rock. There are cities in France that also are carved out of granite and exist in caves. The new way of living, Henry.
Yeah. Well, you know, eventually that might have to come to that.
Yeah. You know, we have that, you know, solar flare.
I mean, the sun rays is, you know, it can be a killer before long.
And then here comes Nibiru.
Cat in the chat room was saying Parex Road Trip and said, I get Henry Spot. I ain't as scared of no basements.
I'm not scared of basements or anything. I'm not a fan of cobwebs. I'm like, let's clean this place out first.
Yeah. You going to clean it out first?
Not personally.
You want somebody else to clean it out first?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's bring a broom in there and sweep those cobwebs out. I mean, I've gotten over my arachnophobia. When I was a child, I had vicious arachnophobia. And now, you know, I can kill them with my bare hands without a problem. But it's not like I enjoy them. I was once in my bedroom. I was in my bedroom late at night, and I just had all the lights out. I just had my phone on. And all of a sudden, I see this motion starting to block the screen. For a moment, I thought it was like some of my hair had gone forward. And I realized it's a spider coming down from the ceiling between me and the phone. I was not happy. And the thing is you just go into reaction mode. You don't think.
Yeah.
So I didn't think of just going, you know, drop the phone and swat where it was sitting. I like flew my hands up and jumped up and threw open the light. And I'm like, well, of course, now I don't know where the hell it is. Now I have to go back to sleep. Great.
And of course, the best joke in the world is, what if that spider lived its whole life thinking you were its roommate and you just killed it? I mean,
yeah,
geez.
Real. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's also the great meme of the spider sitting there, and the text is, you remember me when you threw that shoe at me and then couldn't find me? I remember. You know, it's like, ugh.
I don't
know. Sunny Key West might not seem like the most probable setting for haunted houses, but this small beach community is home of some of the oldest and downright creepiest of all ghost stories. The city's rich history of buccaneers and rum runners provides the backdrop for a lot of these stories, or ghosts rather, like those that are said haunt Captain Tony's Saloon. Before it was a bar, Captain Tony's was supposedly the location of the island's morgue. And the tree that grows through the building center is said to have been a major site for lynching parties and other criminals. And many are said to still haunt the premises today. Other local ghost stories concern the writer Ernest Hemingway, who kept a home on Key West for some 30 years. Hemingway's house, now a museum dedicated to his life and work, is said to house the novelist's ghost. Some visitors and workers claim to see him walking the grounds, while others have heard the clicking of his typewriter coming from inside the main house. And the most haunted is the island's Art and Historical Museum. Isn't haunted, but it does contain one of the creepiest artifacts of Key West's history in the form of Robert.
Yay!
A large doll that many claim is possessed. The doll was given to painter Gene Otto in the early 1900s, and the young boy soon became deathly afraid of it, as he said it would often threaten him and wake him at night by throwing furniture around the room. The boy's parents would often swear they saw the doll moving, and neighbors claimed they often spotted Robert pacing in front of the windows of the house when the family was away. So now it's kept in a museum, and it is enclosed in a little glass case, but that still doesn't keep it from the activity. Some of the other things is, like Jeff was saying at the beginning of the show, that you can't take the doll's picture unless you request it.
Well, you can, you just shouldn't.
Yeah, you shouldn't. You might be sorry.
I still love when I was listening to Marla Brooks' show, Sterling at Cauldron, where she was interviewing the curator of the museum after hours. She was in the museum, and while they were talking, they didn't hear it over the phone themselves, but the chat room all heard it. And fortunately, you know, Marla kept it and played it back later and occasionally still plays it back, where you can hear a male voice in the background calling the name Robert.
Yeah, he said, Robert, my name's Robert. I'm Robert. Yeah, I have that.
That is one thing I obviously I would ask his permission, but I would definitely want to get a photo of me with Robert.
I want to take a full spectrum camera and interview Robert. You remember that scene in Ghost Hunters where they had a full spectrum camera on a psychic who was trying to read Jason, and you could just see the colors shift back and forth. I want to see if Robert has that same type of activity.
Sounds like road trip. I'll go down there with you. Go.
I have friends down there.
Yeah. Oh, do you?
Well, you might want to.
Let me know when you want to go.
Have you seen the device that some ghost hunters use?
Jeff disappeared.
We're talking about Robert.
Yeah. Standing there by himself. A lot of YouTube and
Jeff, you're cutting out. We don't even hear you.
Right into that table, you know, and suddenly it'll, you know, sometimes wink out of existence, or it'll seem like it'll hold out its hand to hold your hand, and nobody is visibly seeing anything physical there. It's just something that's it's picking up the motion of whatever's in the air in that three-dimensional space.
They use that on Ghost Brothers.
That's the
X-Connect,
right?
Yeah, I think, the Connect with a K.
That's kind of a Xbox app, as I recall, or device from that.
Could.
Yeah, I don't know. Are they putting an app like that on the phone? That would be awesome.
I don't think
on a laptop you can get it on the laptop.
I guess, because you would need to have some sensor that would pick up the motion. I don't think the phone would. I mean, the phone would be just like, yeah, whatever.
Huh.
It would be more like the comical, entertaining, quote, ghost radar, which is complete nonsense.
Yeah, but it's fun.
That's been disproved 8 ways to Sunday. Yeah. Like, oh, it's right, am I coming? No.
It's like Pac-Man ghost.
You can put two phones next to each other and...
Well, I don't know how exciting our show was tonight. We didn't get a whole lot of questions, but hope we were very entertaining anyway. I think so.
Shows like this.
Yeah. I still had more. You've probably got some more, too.
Oh, yeah.
You got another?
Not right off the top of my head, but we can see.
Well, I didn't know if you had one. Written down or something like that you didn't get to get to.
Covered the
so.
Ones that I wanted to.
Oh, well, that's good then.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah, very good. And there's a lot of stuff out in California, though. A lot of old mining towns and ghost towns. I wouldn't mind going some of them old places like that and up some of the little creeks. Just look in the creeks and see if you can find little nuggets of gold still laying around
somewhere.
There's
also abandoned amusement parks, and I know there's one back east that was based on the Wizard of Oz.
Really?
Yes. I've seen. I know of that.
Which place was that?
Kentucky,
do you remember?
Or Tennessee, wasn't it?
Something like that. Yeah, it was one of those states, but it's really creepy to see the photos. I've got a number of photos on my phone that I've saved so that I could use them and for when I make references to different Oz related stuff.
Yeah, so there's
but,
they're all abandoned.
Well, there was also up in northern New Jersey, we had Action Park and Jungle Habitat and Fairy Tale Land. These are all very popular attractions that no longer exist. The Phantom, I remember as a child, they were very popular back in the 60s and 70s and probably 50s and 40s. But I remember they had a great way of getting around it, because one of the in the fairy tale, I don't know if it was fairy tale or literally the gingerbread house or something, and it was like a giant facsimile of a gingerbread, of the witch's gingerbread house from Hansel and Gretel. And they got around the fact that obviously it was not made of gingerbread by pointing out that since the witch was destroyed, that it is still gingerbread unless you touch it. If you touch it, it turns to stone. And I thought that was a great workaround. That was like, oh, okay, there you go. As long as it's untouched. And that's been empty for decades. And Jungle Habitat was a drive-through safari place. And somewhere I still have a photo album in my storage unit, which I'm hoping I don't lose because I've had no work in some time, where I have photos from Jungle Habitat, an action park. If you look up Action Park in Vernon, New Jersey, there are hilarious articles about the fact that it was one of the most dangerous places to either attend or work. And my brother and I used to go there all the time. We were in our late teens and able to drive on our own. We'd go. It was this water park and adventure park where, with all these really, really dangerous pre everything has to be cradle to grave government regulated stuff. So like they'd have in the winter it all snow over and they would be ski runs, but in the summer. It was all open. It was a water park, and you could get into like this small roller sled that went careening at top speed down like a cement chute. And you didn't get a helmet. You didn't get any kind of protection. If you fell off that thing at top speed, oh well, that happens. And people were being injured right and left, and it was. Well, it was literally referred to, even by the locals, as Traction Park. Because, and the like I say, if you look at, do a search on Action Park or Traction Park, you'll find some hilarious anecdotal evidence of how horrifically dangerous this place was and people being injured, maimed, and killed. And they were just like, you know, gotta keep it quiet. Kind of like, oh my God. From today's standard, it's just horrific to watch, but it's still hilarious.
Well, that was in the days of lawn darts.
Oh, yeah, lawn darts. Oh, couldn't get a jarts, sometimes they were called, too. And we had those. Yeah. Or as the meme sometimes says, you know, back in our day, we used to do this, this, and this, because we weren't idiots. Yeah, we were safely able to do these things.
All right.
Oh, talk about really. Our time flying by.
Yeah, we got like 2 minutes. So any particular thing you guys got before we close?
Happy Fairy Day, yeah. I said that. Two more episodes of Doctor Who. Yeah. This and next week.
And a couple
week,
more and, of Twin Peaks.
Yes.
Twin Peaks.
No,
I never watched that show.
Oh my God, the season is incredible. I've never seen a show where you're just absolutely compelled to watch it when nothing's happening.
Apparently not too compelled because I haven't watched it.
Well, you don't have Showtime. It's on Showtime. Didn't you see the photos of me in it?
No.
You're not in it,
I don't,
right?
I don't watch Showtime.
Yeah, but you can go to you're in my career progress group on Facebook, right? And I
put something on there, I've probably seen that.
But Patsy have. Patsy will smack you in the back of the head saying, you've seen it.
Yeah, probably. I'm more into watching a lot of the British shows, Father Brown, Midsummer Murders, those types of things.
Did you watch Broadchurch?
Which one?
Broadchurch.
No, I don't think I've seen that one.
Oh, it's third season now.
Grantchester, have you seen that one?
I just heard about that for the first time today.
Yeah, Grantchester's good. Just heard its second season.
Yeah, okay, folks.
So, all right. Well, fellas, we got to run. You guys let me talk right on, didn't you? So this is Henry Foister.
And Jeffrey Gould.
And we will see you next week at the same time. So everybody have a safe weekend. We will see you next week, same time. You've been listening to The Paranormal View on the Para-X Radio Network. Join us again next week at the same time for more of The Paranormal View.